Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the show, everyone, today. If you haven't checked out Megan Kane's Creative Vegetable Gardener website, I know after this interview, you are going to do it as soon as possible. This has to be one of the best gardening websites I've ever visited. I just spent so much time just looking through it. It's full of valuable gardening information. That's just sure to lead you to success in your garden. So that was one of the things I just loved about it. And it's presented in a simple and elegant way. Her pages are organized really efficiently. The posts have like the most engaging titles, like what not to grow in your garden and increase your garden success, that intrigue you so much you just have to click them open. One that I totally couldn't resist was Save Yourself from $5 Red Peppers in January, because those are one of my favorite vegetables. Always so expensive in the store. And plus, when you buy them in the store, they always feel like they have that wax coating. So without further ado, welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast, Megan.
Thanks, Jackie. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we are just excited to have you. So go ahead and tell us a little more about yourself. I just kind of gave a brief intro, but, tell us about your gardening journey and about who you are and where you came from.
Sure. I am Megan, and I live and garden in Madison, Wisconsin. So pretty far northern climate, probably pretty cold, just like yours. And I own a vegetable gardening education business called the Creative Vegetable Gardener, and I help people get the most out of their vegetable garden. So I teach classes and speak around my area in Madison and Wisconsin, but I also have an online presence. So I have some online classes, and I have a blog where I send out a blog post once a week, and have a few ebooks. And I actually just turned one of my ebooks into a print book. So
oh, you did? All right.
Yeah.
Is that the workbook one?
Super easy food preserving. I changed. It's actually a digital ebook, but it's going to be, well, it is, right? I have them in my office right now, but I haven't.
Oh, but that's exciting.
I haven't told my list yet that it's a print book, but I heard from a lot of people, a lot of my clients and a lot of people that I work with, that they wanted a print version instead of a digital version, which I totally understand, because I'm a huge library person and I prefer the physical book over the ebook. So
oh, me too. Totally. I can't, I bought a Kindle. I still can't quite get into it. I've tried to download audiobooks or not even necessarily audiobooks, but like digital books, but I'm just still without a doubt a hold the book in my hands, turn the pages type of reader.
Yeah, me too.
Well, excellent. All right. Congratulations. Good luck with that. I think it's going to be a complete success.
Thank you.
So, all right. Well, so the first question I always like to start with is, you know, tell us a little bit about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? Where were you? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Just like, you know, just a little introduction to where you first started gardening.
Sure. Well, that's one of the things I think, since I'm a garden educator and I spend a lot of time gardening and know a lot about gardening, I think a lot of people assume that I grew up in a farm, especially in Wisconsin, since it's a pretty agricultural state. But I actually grew up in a row home in Philadelphia, and I didn't know anyone that had a garden. I never even thought about gardening when I was young. I always joke that I never even thought about how vegetables grew. I don't even think I really thought about vegetables that much. So I didn't have a lot of experience growing up, although I do have a very faint memory in one of the houses that my parents lived in when I was very young. My mom actually experimented with having a backyard garden, and she now says that she wasn't very successful, but she was successful in growing mint, since it's pretty easy to grow. Cool. And she used to send me out to the backyard to get mint for the iced tea. Mm. So I feel like maybe that had a bigger impact on me than maybe I realized, and has kind of manifested itself later in my life.
I think that's a great story to share. And a lot of my gardeners or guests that I've interviewed have said that when they were kids, and I'm definitely one of them, they didn't want to have anything to do with their parents' garden. So I always like to, you know, offer out to people listening, if your kids are giving you a little resistance, just take it with a grain of salt, keep going, share your passion, and you might be surprised they might have their own gardening, you know, if not just a garden business when they grew up. So right. Just keep sharing. And almost everybody says, I was either with a parent or a grandparent when they started.
Yeah, so I have that small memory, but I didn't really come from a family of gardeners because my family's very urban, so most people didn't have any kind of backyard. Or there's even my siblings and my parents now don't even have, they actually don't really have patches of any green. They just have little concrete patios. So it wasn't until much later that I actually started my gardening journey.
I'm going to encourage listeners to go read your about page because it's just like this great story all on its own. I just fell in love right there from the very beginning. You have just a great voice and just a really nice memoir type of story. So, all right. Well, so then go ahead and share with us, like, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
Well, I don't know how to garden any other way because that's the way I learned how to garden. So sometimes I joke with people that I wouldn't even really know how to tell them how to garden non-organically.
Right? Cool.
But for me, I think it means paying a lot of attention to what's happening in my garden. Also, really paying attention to soil health because that supports the health of all of my plants. And then when I am having an issue in the garden, what I usually do is spend some time researching it. So I don't just run out to the garden, to the nursery or the garden store and try to figure out what kind of chemical I can spray on my garden. If I'm having a pest issue, I usually try to figure out what is the pest, you know, how does it live and function in the garden, and what are the steps that I could take to try to get rid of it out of my garden. And so I would say that I spend more time doing research and looking into any kinds of problems that I'm having in my garden instead of going for a really quick solution in chemicals. And then in the long term, there are some things that I've stopped growing in my garden just because to try to grow them organically has been such a struggle that I've given myself permission to just give up.
You know, that was another thing I saw on your website that I thought that was really important, that you talked a lot about thinking about the garden in terms of what are you going to get from it for the work that you do? Because if you're not someone that has a lot of time to dedicate to a garden, and you might, you know, it might seem overwhelming, I think you have some great advice on there on how to pick what's the best thing for you to grow in your space. And you've got those great diagrams and how to plan things and how to think about what do you want to grow. And I just thought you had some really valuable, concrete information for people, not just that are starting out, but just for anybody who, you know, wants to think about gardening from a really efficient perspective. So,
I consider myself a strategic gardener.
Sure.
I love gardening and it's a huge part of my life and I like to spend time in my garden, but I don't want to waste time in my garden. Uh-huh. So I definitely want a garden that produces as much food as possible. And then I also want a really beautiful garden as well. My garden is in my front yard and I see it all the time. I see it out my window. So I definitely demand a lot from my garden. And my experience is I've seen lots and lots of different people's gardens over the years. And I would say the majority of people are not getting the most out of their garden. So I think a lot of people could maybe be a little more strategic and produce more food, really.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just essential and it will help them feel more successful. And then, you know, I always think that you should focus on your successes. And right. Just keep working and then they're going to expand and eventually. And I love the flowers that you have integrated throughout your garden. There's just your designs are just beautiful.
Thank you. So, yeah, I'm a really visual person. So like I said, I like my garden to be beautiful as well as extremely productive.
So then who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
Well, I talked a little bit about my earliest gardening memory, but it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s. I was still living in big cities, very urban lifestyle. And I have no idea where it came from, but I started to think about gardening and that I wanted to learn how to grow food. So this was probably, this was about 14 years ago for me. And so I ended up applying for an organic gardening internship, and I moved to a small intentional community in Missouri. And I was an intern there for a season. And that was really the first time that I ever really delved into how to grow food. It's kind of funny because the first person that I worked with, who really was one of the first people that taught me gardening, looking back, I don't think was a particularly skilled gardener. But it was also difficult because he was trying to grow a lot of food for a lot of people. So that was my first taste, and I actually felt like I saw a lot of things what not to do. And then
that's right an after- important thing to learn, though. I always encourage, like, when people are like, I don't want to go to college because I don't know what I want to do. And I always tell them, you know, you learn a lot in college about what you don't want to do. And sometimes that's pretty important.
Yeah. So what? Yeah. I mean, one of the things, he just had so many weeds in his garden.
Oh.
And I remember waking up in my tent sometimes in the morning and my hands would be cramped closed. Like I would have to flick my fingers open because we were just doing, you know, they didn't use a lot of machinery, which was fine. It was a very manual labor garden, but the labor was pretty intense and a lot of it was because of the weeds. And so maybe that's why now I really don't like to weed and I go to great lengths to not have weeds in my garden.
But that's something, you know, we all share. And if you can make that easier and make gardening more pleasurable, more people are going to do it. And that's, you know, ultimately what we want. So, well, we're excited to hear some of your secrets today. So then how did you learn how to garden organically? Like partly from that internship?
Yeah, definitely learned a lot from that internship. And then I ended up staying and living at that farm for a year and a half. And after I completed my internship, which was only about 6 months, I then took on with another gardener there, someone who was more experienced than me. We took on the herb garden there together. And so then I had my own garden to start to experiment with. And then I actually met my husband there and we started our first garden together there as well. And so I think that was part of it. I moved from working on in really someone else's garden to then having my own garden. And that's where I really got to start to plan and just kind of learn from. I think that's the best way to learn is to have your own garden. And I made mistakes, and I still have the picture of the first garden that I made, and I would, you know, we didn't really put any paths in it. We just kind of filled it up all with vegetables. So it's kind of funny. Sometimes I show it in some of my classes just to show that, yeah, I mean, I started gardens, and I made lots of mistakes, and I learned from my mistakes and built upon them.
You know, one of my first guests, I was just thinking, Todd Lulizo, I think is his last name, who lives up here in Montana near me, and he started on an internship at a farm and talked a lot about that experience. And I remember him saying something about, you know, it's the best thing because you have $0 invested, but you get all the information and you get to make all your mistakes, a lot of mistakes on somebody else's place. Plus they, you know, they're going to teach you a ton about what they've been doing that has been successful. So I just think if there's any way you can do an internship, for sure that's a great way to learn.
So, yeah, I agree. Even if you don't have time to commit to an internship, what I've done since then, more recently, is I was just a worker share on a CSA farm. And so that was a really great, I actually learned a lot about gardening. By this time, I was a garden educator, but working on a farm where I see, especially a CSA farm, and it was an organic farm, it was a smaller CSA, just 5 acres. And they just to watch, they're so focused on production and variety and efficiency, just a lot of the things that we don't necessarily think about in as home gardeners, but a lot of those things I felt like we could transfer from the farm to the garden to make us think more like farmers. I did a blog post recently that said think like a farmer and had some examples of things that farmers do that we could really use as examples so that we can become more efficient home gardeners.
Excellent. All right. Well, so. Hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about that. I think you're probably definitely right there, that efficiency and that there is a ton we can learn from farmers. So tell us about something that grew really well last season. Like, you know, what was one of your best products or, you know, most proficient vegetables last summer?
Yeah, I would say two of my most favorite things to grow and things that I have pretty good luck with year after year and I grow a lot of are onions and garlic.
Oh, uh-huh.
There's just my husband and I in our house, but we usually grow about 220 garlic that we store in our basement and then use throughout the year. And then we usually grow somewhere between 300 and 500 onions.
Oh my goodness.
We're still eating onions from last year. They're in our basement. We don't have a root cellar or anything like that. Our house isn't that old, but you know, from the 60s, and we have an unfinished basement, and so our basement is pretty chilly in the winter, so that has helped with some storage. But yeah, we still have a whole crate of onions from last year. So I would say that was a huge success. We actually also have a lot of garlic from last year as well.
Nice. That's like kind of our goal with the podcast and our website, Mike's Green Garden, is to teach people how to grow enough produce to feed their family or their household for a year. And we just started actually the 2015 gardening challenge where people can write in and say, you know, this is how much we think we would grow and or we would buy at the store in 2 to 3 months. And this is what we'd like to grow this year. So because
I saw that on your website, and I have a similar challenge that I give in my classes where I say, pick one thing that you want to grow enough of for the entire year.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different than yours, so it's a nice complimentary challenge. So I always use myself an example, like garlic and onions. I haven't bought either of those things from the store in a very, very long time.
Nice. Yeah, we just went with the season because we thought it was kind of late and just for our first challenge to start. But it was just pick one vegetable or one fruit or one flower, even if you wanted to pick like something you would have one or two bouquets a week or something.
Yeah.
But I think just starting little with one and then adding on is good. So well, that's interesting. My last like three out of my last four guests have talked about garlic. After nobody's talked about garlic on my show up until now.
Well, garlic's on the brain probably because everybody's garlic has sprouted and it's sitting in my front yard. So I definitely see it every day. So that maybe that could be part of the reason too. But I think it's a great crop for beginning gardeners because certainly in my area, it's very easy to grow. And there's once you plant it in October and there's not much you have to do until you harvest it in July.
Oh. Okay. Yep. Right. And they were saying that you harvest it early so that then because it takes a long time to dry, like they like to have the month of August or at least part of August and September to let it dry after you harvest it.
Yeah, exactly. Here in Wisconsin, we usually harvest it around the last 2 weeks in July. It really starts to dry down in the garden. It's starting to turn from brown to green other way around, from green to brown, and some of the leaves are dying back. And that's when I harvest mine, and then I tie it up in bundles of 10 just in my garage rafters and let it dry. Sometimes I don't get around to cutting it down until the end of September. Once it starts to get cold and there's a threat of frost, that kind of reminds me that I have to get my garlic inside.
All right. Well, how about something you're excited to do different next year or try new? Is there something you're excited to put in your garden you haven't tried before? Are you going to do different?
Yeah. One of the things that I'm doing this year, which so far I've had, well, I actually started last fall, is trying to experiment with some season extension.
Oh,
I had some great success this spring. I built a hoop over one of my raised beds and used PVC and greenhouse plastic. Actually, one of my recent blog posts was about my hoop. And I planted 11 different things in it in early March, which is much earlier than we can ever plant here in Madison. Usually, I start planting my garden about mid-April. And so I planted about 5 or 6 weeks earlier than I ever had before, and I had the hoop over it. And it was great. Things have been growing really well. And I harvested, I think I harvested my first big bowl of salad right around April 13th, somewhere around
there. Wow. Oh, but that was good.
Yeah, it's been great. And since then I've harvested, we just have so much salad right now, spinach and salad. And I had overwintered some scallions from last year as well. So yeah, so it's been really exciting. And so I'm going to continue to experiment with that to see how far I can push things. And then I'll do it again in the fall to see how long I can preserve things in my garden. I did a little bit last year, and on Christmas morning I harvested, spinach is pretty easy because it survives the winter here, but I also harvested arugula and baby bok choy and some turnips for Christmas dinner.
Wow, fresh out of the ground?
Yeah, fresh out of the ground.
Did you have snow on the ground?
We
like,
did.
I mean, not under the hoop, but like in other places?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, I'll bet that was so yummy and just what a treat at Christmas dinner.
It was really fun. It was great.
All right. Well, how about sharing with us something that didn't work so well this season that you were kind of disappointed or didn't go the way you wanted it to? Or
sure. I think one of my, I start all my seeds at home and with pretty good success, except for peppers are my seed starting nemesis. They like it really warm, and sometimes my house is on the colder side because I live in a pretty cold area. But over the years, it's just kind of funny. I've used seedling heat mats. I actually bought this heat coil that I put in the soil to warm up the soil because peppers like it, like 80 to 85 degree soil temperature. I've tried all different kinds of things. This year I used the heating coil and the seedling heat mat. And they did all finally germinate, but I had a really slow germination. Everything else always germinates great, but I always seem to struggle with peppers.
Mm-hmm. They're tough. And like we had a really cold, like 22 degrees the other day. And so we have Mic Plastics in our porch. And then the kitchen window and the kitchen door just open into it. But we shut the kitchen door at night, and with the fire, I think, had gone out, and just it was pretty cold in there one morning. He was kind of, they looked kind of wilted and kind of had fallen over. But I think just heating it up, they did okay. But yeah, peppers and eggplants really like some warmer weather. But how about something you find that's easy to grow and generally successful every time?
Oh, we talked about garlic. I would definitely do that. I think, at least in my area, kale is really easy. There's not a lot of pests. There's lots of different kinds of kale. I've found success with pretty much all of them. You can plant it early in the season, and it lasts in your garden all the way past the first frost. So it's pretty hardy, and it's fine in the heat of the summer. So kale is one that I really like. Spinach is one of my favorites to grow here in Wisconsin, especially fall planted spinach. I usually plant spinach in somewhere near the end of August and then harvest it all fall, like I said, sometimes all the way up until Christmas. And then I mulch over it, and then in March when it feels like things are starting to thaw out and the sun's getting a little bit stronger, I'll take the mulch off and it will start to regrow. And so you can have a really easy, really early harvest of spinach in early April, which is, again, much earlier than we usually get to harvest anything out of the garden here in Wisconsin.
Oh, I like that tip. So you cover it with the mulch and then you take the mulch off. Because we've always, ours just always kind of popped up through the snow. But that's a good idea to cover it all with the mulch and then pull that off.
Yeah, there's years that I've forgotten to do that, and it's been fine. I think it just helps protect it. The problem with the winter is often just the winds, the desiccation that happens from the wind, the cold and the wind. So I figure I usually just try to protect it a little bit from the desiccation that happens. But I haven't done that in the past. And it's true, if you get a nice early cover of snow and then it kind of for the whole winter, that's insulative as well.
Mm-hmm. I always like it when it snows instead of freezes hard in the beginning of the year. And I had this guest, Kathy O'Leary, on a couple of weeks ago who was from Idaho. And she said she mulches her carrots through the winter, really puts just a very, very thick layer of straw mulch on top of her carrots. And then she can dig them up right out, you know, you move the snow away and they might be a little frozen on the outside, but she said those carrots are just as sweet as can be and she can dig them right up in the middle of winter. I was like, wow. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
In our area, I would say any kind of melon, watermelon, cantaloupe. We have a pretty short season, and melons are pretty long season. A lot of the farmers that grow melon in our area use black plastic in their fields to kind of increase the heat. So it's pretty tough. I mean, I think it's something that people really love to grow if they can grow it successfully, but it's difficult to grow successfully in this area. And I think cauliflower is pretty difficult as well. It really depends on what variety you grow. And then I don't know, I just feel like it doesn't sit in the garden for that long. It goes from perfectly ripe to overdone pretty quickly. And maybe because I'm not a big fan of cauliflower, that's it's not worth the effort for me. I don't even really like it that much. I'll eat it, but I don't want to put all that effort into growing that. So those two things. And then sometimes I'll talk with people who have a small garden and talk a little bit about winter squash and pumpkins, which can often be fun to grow, but they take up a lot of room. And so some people, and you don't actually get that many butternut squash per vine, and it takes, you know, whatever, 110 days, 120 days. So sometimes I talk about to people, I think it's really a personal choice about what is worth it for you to grow. But I do encourage people, like we talked about before, to really think strategically about what is worth it to grow for you. I don't grow butternut squash in my garden because I don't have enough room. And instead, I just go to the farmer's market in the fall and I buy a couple crates of butternut squash very inexpensively because it's the height of the harvest season. And then I just store them in my basement and eat them all winter.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I think that's those are some really good things to think about, is how much space it's going to take up and what you really are expecting, to set your expectations for what you're expecting to get out of it.
Right. I think it's also how many days something takes, which I think is more of an intermediate advanced thing. Like when you're a beginning gardener, you don't necessarily realize that radishes you could have radishes in 28 days, whereas if you plant a butternut squash, you're going to have to wait 120 days.
I know. I always look at Mike and I'm like, how do you have the patience to wait this long for some things? Like sometimes I'm like, oh my goodness, it's going to be forever before we get this food. And then the radishes, like we're almost ready. I think our radishes are almost ready to eat already this year. He put them in and they've been growing like crazy. So yeah, radishes are always fun to grow with kids too, I think.
They are.
I think people like don't realize and don't really like, you look at the back of the packet, but you're not really thinking. And even like some vegetables, like even the same vegetable, how different,
right?
It can be the growing season, you know, like with corn or some of the other vegetables that maybe take longer depending on what variety you buy.
Yeah, I teach an online class in January, February that's about planting your garden, and we talk a lot about that. All those things to kind of help people think a little bit more strategically and make choices with just be a little bit more educated about making choices in what you're going to grow. But again, just because I think winter squash isn't worth it, somebody else might absolutely love growing it and it totally is worth it for them. So I think it's very personal in some ways.
And I always tell listeners a lot and talk about, my mom likes the flowers you get off of a squash plant and we'll make like flower fritters. And I don't think you can probably get those at the store. So that's kind of a bonus to growing your own squash. How about, which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you got to force yourself to get out there and do?
Well, I would say definitely weeding. I'm not a huge weeding fan, so I go to great lengths to have the least amount of weeds as possible throughout the season. So my garden is always mulched. I rarely ever have any bare soil in my garden except when I'm waiting for things to germinate. So my aisles are covered in wood chips and all my garden beds are covered in hay. So, you know, I don't mind doing some spot weeding, but I really don't like spending large amounts of time weeding. And I actually think it's kind of a waste of time in the garden because you can set yourself up so that you don't have a lot of weeding to do. And I don't know, pretty much everything else I kind of like to do. Yeah, I'd say weeding is my least favorite.
Okay. I'm just thinking, like, for some listeners maybe who haven't heard some of the earlier shows or are kind of new to gardening, do you just want to like explain about mulching just a tiny bit more? If
Sure. And I talk a lot about it on my blog because I'm kind of obsessed with mulch, and I'm always trying to convince everybody to mulch their garden. So, anytime that there's bare soil, weeds are going to grow. That's their job. Their job is they're the kind of the pioneer species. They sprout really quickly because they're trying to hold the soil down so that it doesn't erode and it doesn't blow away or wash away. So they're really just doing their jobs. So what I like to do is try to set up my garden so that they don't need to do their jobs. I don't have any bare soil. So I like, in my area, what I like to use the most is marsh hay, but people use grass clippings and leaves. You can use straw. Just have to be careful of your source to make sure that you're not importing more weeds into your garden. So, sometimes the hay fields, hay is just somebody cut their really weedy, grassy field, and you might get some weed seeds. So you kind of have to be careful of your source. But if you go on my website, you can see some different pictures of my garden, and you'll see that I always have all my beds, all the soil is covered in hay mulch, which means there's no visible soil, unless, like I said, I'm waiting for something to germinate, and then once it pops through the soil and grows a little bit, then I'll mulch it with hay. And then in my aisles, I have all my aisles. I just like to get rid of the grass. I don't like to have grass in my vegetable garden. Because I don't really like to have to weed whack around my beds or mow. So I just get rid of all the grass by covering up with cardboard and wood chips. And so my aisles always have wood chips and my beds always have hay.
Excellent. That was great. Nice and explained really well. I think people are kind of getting a more visual picture in their head. I'll definitely put the links to your website in the show notes, and there are some great pictures there of the beds with the mulch in them. And a lot of my guests have talked about that. Actually, the girl whose episode posted today on Monday, from Santa Fe, New Mexico, she does aquaponics a lot, but she talked a lot about mulching. So, but I didn't really, ha I like the way that you've explained it for listeners a little better. Now, marsh hay, is that, you mean like coming from,
Yeah,
like,
from a water, from a marsh. I live in an area with lots of lakes and lots of water. We're very lucky in that way. And so there are a lot of marshy areas. And so the person, I actually know the guy who I get my marsh hay from. It's just on his property. It's actually just reed canary grass, but he just cuts it and bales it, before it goes to flower or anything like that. And I really like his bales because I often tell people that I keep my bales outside. I don't really have room in my garage to store my bales. I actually like when they get a little bit wet and start to break down. And I've never seen anything sprout out of any of those bales in 12 years of using his marsh hay. And so I know that it's a safe source. Whereas I have bought straw and then mulched my garden, and then a bunch of green, usually it's oats, which isn't that big of a deal, but a bunch of oats that kind of looks like grass will start sprouting out of the mulch. And so it's kind of alarming, I think, to some people. It's you just mulched because you didn't want to have weeds, and then all of a sudden there's a bunch of stuff sprouting out of your hay or out of your straw. So you do have to just be ask some questions from wherever you're getting. If you decide to use some hay or some straw, just ask questions about where it's coming from to make sure that there's not a bunch of weed seed in there.
One of my guests, Peggy Owsley, talked about that and making sure that you don't get hay that's been treated. That weed-free hay means that it's been, treated with chemicals. So you want to be careful of that. She said that we have a big problem in our, or she, actually, maybe she was talking about the manure, the animals that were eating the weed-free hay, and then the manure was coming from them. I guess I'm just having a hard time picturing, like, how does this guy go into this marsh and harvest it without like a tractor sinking in the mud? But he must have some way to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a good question. I should next time I see him, I'll
But
say, "Hey, explain your process so I can tell the
cool.
people."
All right. Well, so then on the flip side, what is your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, one of my recent favorite activity, because I post a lot of pictures and I think gardeners are really visual people. Last summer, I decided I wanted to up the quality of the kinds of pictures that I was posting on my site. So I invested in a new camera and I actually took an online photography class. So I spent a lot of time last summer in my garden just practicing and taking pictures and trying to capture just a lot of the really beautiful moments in the garden. And I loved it more than I had expected because I think a lot of times, as gardeners, when we're in our garden, a lot of times we're working and we kind of have this like to-do list and okay, I have to weed this bed and then I have to mulch this and then I have to, get these other weeds out and then I have to plant this. And you're kind of just working down your list. Whereas when you're in there and you're taking pictures, you're really just. I just felt like I was just in my garden and I was looking at things really closely and I was appreciating the colors and I was searching, my eyes were always searching for something beautiful to take a picture of. And so, yeah, it's been almost like a meditative exercise and a chance to just go out and really see my garden instead of just always being working in my garden.
Oh, so many valuable tidbits there. And I think your class really helped. I mean, your pictures are just stunning. They're just spectacular. The vision you've really captured, to me, the essence. I mean, you've got your composition is great. The way some of them are like banner shots compared to, just regular rectangles and, the way you've got the flowers positioned next to the vegetable. I mean, you've really captured the essence of your garden and mixed your colors so they really pop. But I think that, that you went and you got a camera, you invested, you took a class to help you do better, and you can see the results right there. I mean, I don't know what your website looked before, but I know when I got there, I was like, wow, look at this website. I mean, I was really impressed. So,
Thank you. And not all the pictures on my website are mine. Definitely all the pictures within my blog are usually mine, but I have had a professional photographer come out to my garden in the past and take some pictures. So not everything's mine, but a lot of it is. Because just as a small business owner, you can't, I mean, there's no way I could afford to buy photos for everything that I want to write about. And really, what people want to see is a lot of times is my garden. So.
And it makes a big difference. Like I've taken a million pictures, but I'm much more of a what's it called? Like a candid type of person. And like I still like when I very first went to college, I went for photography. As a matter of fact, they practically kicked me out because they were like, if you take one more picture of a tree, you're gonna like fail this class. Like I just kept taking, and to me, they were all different. I was like, what do you mean? I was like, these trees, have leaves, and these are pine trees, And I was just like, what do you mean? What's wrong with lots of trees? But anyway, what was my point is that like now that I have my website and I've been looking, I realize that I don't really have a lot of quality photos and I need to kind of like focus more on to me, I've just always been snapping. Now, granted, I'm the artist of the family and I take a lot of those pictures and paint them and maybe I'm going to be able to make them come alive that way. And I do get to spend a lot of time. I'm pretty spoiled. My husband does most of the work and I spend a lot of time painting the garden. But cool. Well, I like all those things. And I might try to get the link from what online class you took because
Sure.
I might check into that. And I know somebody else who got a Mother's Day present yesterday, a camera, wants to start taking pictures. Tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year you had something that was just so prolific you were just surprised and came out really well?
Let's see. Well, I think one of the crops that I get the most excited about when it turns out really well are red peppers. Because they're tricky to grow sometimes. And really over time, what I've found is that there's really just certain varieties that do better than others. So often when people talk to me about red peppers, I always ask, what variety do you grow? Because some are definitely better than others. But that's the one of the things in the garden that makes me feel rich. When I have a whole bucket full of red peppers, I'm just so happy and so giddy. There, I don't know, there's just something about them. It just they feel so rare and valuable.
They are. 'Cause it's hard to get them to turn red, 'cause for us, I know like that's right when the frost comes, when they're finally just like, and you're watching it and it's getting bigger and it's growing. Now, are you talking about sweet red peppers or hot red peppers or both?
About sweet. Yeah, I
you
do
are. Okay.
a little bit of spicy peppers for salsa making, but mostly what I grow is sweet red peppers. I like to I freeze a lot of my peppers. I chop them up and freeze them for the winter. So
I'm gonna do that. I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, it's super easy. Just do it just raw. I just take out the seeds and the stems and then chop them and put them. I actually just put mine in canning jars usually and then just put them in the freezer.
Ooh, that's even better, yeah. I love red peppers. Definitely one of my favorite vegetables. So cool. All right. How about the best gardening advice you have ever received?
Oh, best gardening advice I've ever received. It's kind of funny because I'm always on the other side. I'm always on the other side where I'm giving
while, huh?
advice.
I know, it's funny. You know what? I have my friend interview me this morning. That's going to be coming out one of these soon days. And she asked me that question. And I guess I hadn't thought about it. Or like I thought about it last week when we talked about it. And then I hadn't. And I was like, what is the best gardening advice?
I think now the stage that I'm at in gardening is that I really love to hear about the details of people's gardening methods and their techniques and their experiences that I just love. I feel like now I just pick up little things here and there where I think, oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to try that. And a lot of times it's just like the really little details that kind of fascinate me.
Cool.
So
I like
I think it probably ties in with the hoop again. I read the book, The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener, last summer, and she's really Nikki Jabor, I think her name is, and she really inspired me to try to figure out how to extend my season. So I think in an indirect way, the advice that she gave me through the book was extend your season. Try to, especially since I live in a northern climate, try to see if I can add some weeks or even months onto my season where I'm getting food out of my garden. So yeah, that's probably the most recent inspirational advice I've gotten.
Ooh, I like that. Cool. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
I would say the digging fork is what I use the most in my garden. Some people might know it as like the potato digging fork. It's kind of a squared off fork with usually has four tines. Mm-hmm. And I use it for everything, but I particularly use it for weeding in my garden. So when I used to run a youth farm, and I wouldn't let anybody weed with hand tools because it's so hard to get the roots out with hand tools. So I'd make everybody weed with a digging fork so that we could really pop everything out by the roots.
Now, my friend, we were just talking about this morning because we were wondering, like, how do you do that without pulling the plants out?
It's not hard. It's definitely possible. Sometimes you have to jiggle. Like what I'll do is jiggle the soil a little bit so that I'm not taking a big clod of soil like you would with a shovel. Sometimes it can kind of function as a shovel where it's trying to bring up like this big clod of soil. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I'll just wiggle the soil. I was just doing this with dandelions the other day where I was digging the fork in, then I was kind of wiggling it around and then trying to wiggle out the dandelion. So sometimes I'm just kind of loosening the soil with it, and then I can kind of pull the weeds out.
Oh, okay, cool. So this is a question I ask, and some people are like, huh? But I always have a hard time, like, eating and harvesting my vegetables or fruit, like, on time before it goes bad. Or I'll go down and I'll pick, like, two giant baskets full of lettuce, and then I'm like, what do I do with all this lettuce? Like, do you have any secrets or tips for that?
Well, I put a lot of food away for the winter, so I really try to eat locally as much as possible all year round, which is hard, as you know, when you live in a cold northern climate. Mm-hmm. And so I put lots of food away, but I don't like to can, so I spend a lot of time, or I don't want to say a lot of time, because I like to do whatever is the quickest and easiest way to store vegetables. And so actually that's the ebook that I turned into a print book is called Super Easy Food Preserving. And I have most of the different common vegetables and some fruits and some herbs. And I talk about what the easiest way to put them away for the off-season eating. So like we already talked about, I store onions and garlic in my basement so that there's no processing necessary. Mm-hmm. I store winter squash in my basement. We already talked about red peppers. I just chop them and freeze them raw. So some things need a little bit of processing, before you put them in the freezer. But I recommend to people, if they're interested in putting some food away and you don't really want a can, I would invest in a chest freezer, because there's so many things that come out of the garden that you can freeze pretty easily. And then those things are really easy to use. I mean, they're like, a lot of times when I'm cooking in the winter, it's everything's already pre-chopped. I'm just taking out bags and jars, and I'm taking a handful of corn, throwing it in. I'm taking a handful of peppers, taking a handful of broccoli. Sometimes I feel like I'm just assembling the dish instead of really doing a lot of prep, because I've done a lot of the prep when I was putting things into the freezer, which to me a lot of times feels a lot more efficient. I'd rather, instead of spending many different short periods of time mm-hmm. prepping vegetables, I sit down for an hour one evening and just cut a whole bunch of peppers, you know, and it takes me two different times and I have all the peppers I need for the rest of the year.
And I always like for me to have frozen broccoli where I can just grab a handful and like throw it on a pizza or throw it in an omelet or just, you know, one serving's worth if I'm making a burrito or something, and the broccoli's already cut up and chopped up and cleaned and everything, like you said, it makes it more efficient. And I love having frozen broccoli. I don't feel like Mike could ever grow enough broccoli for us, but that's my favorite food, I think.
I like broccoli as well. And what I like to remind people is that you don't have to grow everything you preserve.
Right. Good point.
I do grow broccoli, but I can't grow enough broccoli because we eat it all winter. And so I go to the farmer's market in the fall when people have tons and tons of broccoli. And last year I bought this huge bag of broccoli. I think it was $12.
Wow.
And I just froze jars and jars of it. It was pretty easy. I did it all at once. And I thought, well, that was even almost better than growing it myself, where I'd probably have to do a little bit at a time. I kind of prefer just getting a big lump sum of it and then just processing it all at once.
That is a great idea. You know, I haven't really, like, Mike buys some things from other people, like he's bought a case of apples before here and there, and but I have never thought of buying a big bulk thing of broccoli in the fall like that. And probably I could get some organic broccoli for a good price around here too that way. And I love the can thing. Now, I blanch my broccoli. Do you blanch? You don't put broccoli in just raw, right?
I don't. I usually steam mine, but I do think the trick is to just, I steam mine just until it turns bright green, then I dunk it in the ice water.
Mm-hmm. That's so what I do. I kind of like boil the water and just dip it in. As soon as it changes color, it's out of there as fast as you can get it.
It's pretty easy to overdo it. My husband did it, was in charge the summer before, and I said, oh, you processed it too long, because every time we cooked with it, it was kind of mushy.
Yeah.
I don't like it when it's mushy, so I like when it feels like, you know, fairly al dente.
Cool. How about, got any special techniques for cooking? Any kind of weird or an unusual food? Something maybe people haven't heard of before?
Something people haven't heard of. Well, I'm going to grow okra. I've grown okra in the past. So I'm going to grow it again this year because I actually love okra. And that was when I lived in Missouri. It's more of a southern crop, and people grew it down there. They have a little bit longer of a season. But I've grown it in the past, and my friend grows it every year. So I got some, he saved some seed last year. So I got some seed from him and I started some plants. And so I have a couple different varieties of okra, and it's a really beautiful, I don't know if you've ever seen the plant in the garden, but it's in the hibiscus family. And so it grows really tall, kind of like a corn stalk, but then it has these really big flowers on it that look like hibiscus flowers.
Ooh.
So it's really beautiful. And I know a lot of people don't like okra, but I have a couple ways that I cook it that I really love. So I do like to grow it. And it's kind of a fun thing because people will kind of ask you if they're in your garden or near your garden, they'll say, what is that plant?
Can you share a recipe, like just something quick?
Sure. My favorite way to cook it is I just cut it up like into coin size, just slices. And then I put some olive oil in a pan. I throw it in the pan and then I put cornmeal and salt in there with it.
Uh-huh.
I think one thing that people don't like about okra is it can be kind of mucilaginous. I think that's what most people think of when they think of okra. So the cornmeal kind of helps keep it dry. And so then I just saute, like brown it And then, oh my gosh, I could eat that every day for a snack.
Oh, yum. All right.
And I just dump it in a bowl and just eat it like that. It's so good.
Cool. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? Like, what's your favorite thing to go out there and grab and then take it and cook, put together?
Well, I think probably the thing that I eat the most is probably my favorite dish is easy, is just a spinach salad. That's probably my most favorite thing. We have salad almost every night if there's spinach or local stuff available. So not usually in the height of the summer, we're busy eating other things, but pretty most of the time the rest of the year we're eating spinach salad. So that's pretty easy. I don't really cook any of my spinach. I always just eat it raw. But for me it really just depends on the time of year. We really eat so seasonally. Whatever is at the farmer's market or coming out of my garden is how I decide what I'm going to eat. And so I'm really hoping I'm going to go to the farmer's market tomorrow, and I'm really hoping that someone has asparagus because I have a few asparagus dishes that I like to cook, and I only really cook them this time of year because this is the only time of the year we have asparagus. So for me, it's definitely vegetable based and seasonally based. But one of my favorite websites is 101cookbooks.com. It's just a woman who has written a couple of cookbooks. She's a really nice, great photographer. It's a really visually beautiful site. And you can search by ingredient. So that's what I usually do. I say, okay, I have asparagus. I'm going to search for a recipe.
You know, isn't that interesting? You're the first person I think that's recommended a cookbook. I can't be sure because they're getting with number 44, they're getting, but I don't think anybody has recommended a cookbook. That's interesting.
Yeah, so her site has tons of recipes, and then she also has a couple of cookbooks as well. But some of her, definitely saw a lot of her recipes have kind of fallen into my regular rotation.
Oh, what was I just thinking? So a friend of mine's from Michigan, or I mean Wisconsin, and she said that asparagus grows like crazy there, and that like some people even have to like mow it down. It grows so prolifically. Now, do you not grow asparagus at your place?
Well,
Is
I
that true?
actually, we, yeah, it's pretty prolific, for a window of time in the spring. You can also find wild asparagus. So I have some friends that mark some different spots and then go back and look for wild asparagus when it's asparagus season. My husband and I sold our last house, not this past winter, the winter before, and we bought a new house last spring. So we gave up our old asparagus plot, and we have planted a new plot, but as you may know, it takes a few years to really get going. So no, I don't have any asparagus of my own this year.
Cool. Well, good luck. I hope the farmers market, and it's good to hear that they're open. I think our farmers market, well, the one down in Missoula opened May 2nd, so that was last Saturday, I think was the first day. How about a favorite internet resource?
Favorite internet resource? Well, like I said, 101 cookbooks I really like for recipes. I have to recommend my own site, I guess. I also like A Way to Garden, Margaret Roach's. I was just listening to one of her podcasts on my bike home today. So she has a really interesting site. She's been a gardener for quite a long time. If you live in the Northwest, I really like Northwest Edible. So it's nwedible.com. She has a very unique voice. She's pretty witty. So I like her blog as well. Yeah, those are probably my two gardening blogs that I follow. Lee, I'm not sure how to say his last name, Reich or Reck, Reich. He's written a few books about perennial edibles, so he focuses a lot on fruit trees and berry bushes. And so I also get his blog as well, and he always inspires me to want to plant different, currants or blueberries, or he always has lots of different posts. So he really focuses on perennial berries and fruits, and really kind of in a guy right along with my heart, like not trying to battle with real things that are hard to grow, like figuring out what are the easiest berries and fruits to grow, and then trying to grow those in your yard.
Cool. All right. I like that. I get that Margaret Roach's A Way to Garden blog too. But I have not heard of the Northwest Edible or the Right. have to check those out. Cool. How about a favorite reading material, like a favorite book or magazine?
Well, like I said, I'm a huge library. I read a lot. I love books, and I love the library. So I get a lot of Whenever I read about a new gardening book, I see if my library has it first.
Me
too. Madison has an amazing library system, so very often they do. And then I'll read the book from the library, and if it's something I really like, I'll potentially add it to my own library. But there's so many great gardening books out there. The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener definitely has been one of my recent favorites, which I actually bought. Let's see. I do get Organic Gardening Magazine, which is kind of fun to read. And then what else? I'm trying to think of what else. This isn't vegetable gardening, but I do have perennial gardens as well. And I really like the Perennial Gardener's Design Primer. And she, I'm totally blanking on the author's name right now, but she also has a blog, which is really more about perennials and annuals, flowers. But I know a lot of people who vegetable garden also potentially have some perennial gardens, and she has an amazing eye. Just some of the plant combinations she comes up with, and she grows some really unique things. It's a really fun blog to look at all the pictures. She's very picture heavy on her blog. And then her design primer book is really great if you're struggling or even just want to learn a little bit more about perennial garden design. It's a really great book.
All right. I'm definitely going to have to check that out. I'm the flower farmer of the family. Mike's the vegetable farmer. And I'm going to have a guy, Dave Salmon, who is down in New Mexico, who's a perennial farmer on, I think, next week.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I hope there's lots of listeners that are into flowers and perennials. And Mike planted a bunch of irises last year, and I can't believe how good they're doing. I feel like there's got to be 100-something irises out there all of a sudden. So
yeah,
perennials are nice. And if any listeners don't know, so perennials are flowers that will come back every year without having to reseed them, whereas annuals are like snapdragons or zinnias or something that you have to put in the ground every year. I just, like, in case somebody doesn't know. Now, do you have, the next question is, like, if you have a business, you have advice for listeners about how to sell extra produce or get started in the industry, but you don't really do that, but maybe you could talk about being an educator, and, like, I was kind of curious about, you said that you put a garden in a school?
Yeah, I used to work for a nonprofit in Madison for 7 years. For part of the time, I developed one of the first kids gardening programs in Madison. And then the second half of the time I worked there, I developed a youth farming program. So both of those worked in partnership with some of the schools. Yeah. I would say if you want to become a garden educator, first find out. What I would do is probably find, is there an organization in your town or your city that's doing garden education, and then first start out as a volunteer, or see if they have an internship, or volunteer for a few hours a week and get involved in the program and kind of see how they do it and how the garden education world works if you don't have any experience.
Cool. I like that. And then my final question is, if there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would that be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either in your local area or on a national or global scale?
Well, I think for me, of course, gardening ties into it all. I would love to see more and more people at least. I don't feel like you have to grow all your own food. It's really hard, especially if you live in the city. But just to grow some of your food and to get that experience, I think it gives you much more of an appreciation of where food comes from, how long it takes to grow it, how difficult it is to be a farmer. And I think people who grow some of their own food are more likely to go to the farmer's market and buy from farmers, or to pay attention to where their food comes from. I think the industrial food system has a lot of problems with it. And certainly in our country, the fact that California is in a very severe drought, and we get a lot of our food from California. Just having that experience, just getting yourself to learn how to grow at least just a little bit of your own food. It's a really empowering experience to know that you can provide for yourself. And so I would love to see more people, especially in the United States, learning how to grow at least a small portion of their own food. We've done it before in the past, so I think we can get back to it and do it again.
That's a good point. When my husband was a kid, almost everybody had a garden, and now we've gone totally the other way. So hopefully, there's more people are gardening and learning. How about just an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Sure. I have this great book that's called Mindfulness in the Garden, Zen Tools for Digging in the Dirt.
Ooh, nice.
My brother-in-law gave me. So, and actually the foreword is by Thich Nhat Hanh. So it's kind of about gardening and mindfulness. And so I have a couple of quotes in it that I underlined. And one that I like is, nature is the master of being. It knows nothing other than to simply be itself, vast, infinite, and unconditional. If we want to learn how to be, we need to spend time with the master, nature itself. So I think that sums up gardening for me. I think we live in a busy world and we spend a lot of time with technology and we're all running around from one thing to another. And I think really the deep joy and the deep stillness that gardening brings to my life is really one of the greatest gifts. Sure, it's wonderful to learn the skills and the techniques and to grow the food, but there's also that, there's the doing in the garden and there's also the being in the garden. And I think it's the being that really is so important in my life and probably for a lot of other people as well, a way to connect to myself and to connect to nature and just connect to the stillness that's out there and also within myself.
Yeah. And I think people will realize if they start to spend time in their garden, they're going to be surprised at how many animals and birds they start to hear and notice and just little creatures maybe, and just even connecting with things that grow, flowers and vegetables and watching them grow and how fast. Sometimes you're like, wow, did that just grow before my eyes? I got some of those weird warm days or an extra rain and things seem to grow really fast. So
yeah, you become really in tune with your little ecosystem of your garden, which then allows you to become in tune with, I think, with nature as a whole.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, thank you, Megan, so much for being on the show today and sharing just an incredible wealth of knowledge. I know our listeners have learned a lot, just about a lot of different topics, not just gardening, but I think about, some basic, principles for life and about living a strategic life but a natural strategic life.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. And folks are welcome to come over. I'd love to have them as part of my community. You can sign up for my email list on my homepage at creativevegetablegardener.com. And thanks for having me. It's one of my most favorite things to do in the world is talk about gardening.
Oh, cool. Wait, but tell everybody, what's that? They get that I signed up right away because I was like, I got to know this. Was it
When you sign up, you'll get a series of five emails that's five mistakes to avoid in your garden right now. So it's just some of I've been to lots and lots of people's gardens and have worked with tons of gardeners over the years. And believe it or not, there's a lot of people making the same mistakes. So just some of the most common mistakes that I've seen people make. And then just a little bit of explanation of what you could potentially do differently.
Yeah. Well, okay. And I'll put the links to everything in the show notes page for people that they can look at. So we'll just have a great week and a wonderful summer. And thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks a lot, Jackie.
How would you like to win a copy of one of my all-time favorite gardening books, Rodale's An Ultimate Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening? If you enter our 2015 gardening challenge by going to our website at awesomemontana.com and clicking on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener podcast, right on top, there's a link to the gardening challenge where you can fill out a simple form. It just asks your name, the number of people in your household, what vegetable, fruit, or flower you're choosing, how much you plan to grow, and where you live. You can always email me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. There's no spaces, all lowercase, organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. And just send me the information there too. Our goal is to help listeners be inspired to grow enough produce to feed your household for a year, or at least, you know, supplement your produce bill a little. So since our first challenge this year, we're just encouraging you to pick one fruit, a vegetable, or a flower, just one, that you would like to grow enough of for your household for 2 to 3 months, like for a season. Since it's a little late, we thought just, you know, 2 months. If you pick lettuce, you might, you know, it always depends. So something that you want to grow 2 or 3 months worth, you know, kind of figure out how much would you buy if you went to the store. Would you buy a 2-pound bag of carrots every week, or would you buy, you know, a 10-pound bag of potatoes every couple of weeks? Or, you know, if you're picking flowers, you might think about, you know, a bouquet. You know, what do you want? Like enough carrots to feed you and your kids, or enough salad to have to eat every day for the month of July, or, you know, enough zinnias to have a fresh bouquet or two on your table each week? You know, whatever it is that you'd like to grow for a season, let us know and you'll be entered to win a copy of Rodale's Ultimate Encyclopedia of Gardening. And then I just want to encourage you, if there's anything we can do to help make your garden journey easier, more successful, if you have any questions, if you just want to share your challenges or successes, we would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback for the show, somebody, a guest you'd like to hear from, or a topic you want to learn more about, you know, please, you know, let me know. Any honest suggestions that we can implement are always appreciated. Just, you know, let us know. Who are you? How do you like the show? You know, what can we do? We'd love to hear from you. Again, you can always email me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com, or just reach out to the contact form on the website. Thank you so much for listening to me.